The origin of the earth. Well, this one I think is this easier to deal with? Yes, this is. Mostly, I guess, because I know more about astronomy than I do about paleontology. There used to be two views that contended on more or less equal footing in science about how the planets came into being. One was the idea that the sun must have collided with another body, and they were stripped off. The Urantia book has a somewhat more sophisticated view of the sun being a variable star, and as another heavy body came by during one of its expansion phases, a gravity explosion occurred, and they were stripped off. And what actually happened was a big bunch of solar mass formed what's called an accretion disk that was in orbit around the sun for a long period of time and gradually clumped together to form the planets. Now, the only real difference is that the nebular condensation theory, which was put forward, I believe, originally by the French mathematician Laplace, and he mostly, I think, did it to demonstrate some wonderful mathematical techniques he had developed for describing fluid flow and rotating bodies and stuff like this. He essentially described certain conditions under which a contracting body of gas and stuff would split apart, would become unstable, and it would break up into a ring of material and a smaller body that would go on contracting. Then this would lead to the formation again of these accretion rings, which would gradually clump and form planets. And the Laplace theory of planetary formation contended on more or less equal footing with the collisional viewpoint. It seems to me until, my cynical view is that it came up when astronomers had learned enough math to understand Laplace's theory, they adopted it. I'm sure there were other reasons. But the general idea that emerged in the 20th century was that everything had formed from the collapse of gas and dust clouds. And I think, you know, a lot of the evidence came from looking into interstellar space and seeing large gas and dust clouds in which it appeared that new stars were forming. They analyzed the distribution of stars, they inferred what the ages of different stars were, they observed regions where stars were in a process of formation, they saw they were associated with gas and dust, they presumed that the accretion was going on, and this sort of led to the thought that it was all done by accretion. Well, the interesting thing is the Urantia book says that most of it is done by accretion. And it says that the origin of this collisional origin that we had is a relatively unusual method. But in fact, that our planetary system was formed by collision. So the method contradiction that appears here is not a real contradiction if you say, well, the Urantia book really admits several methods of formation of planetary systems. And the fact that science is currently preferring one over the other, the Urantia book simply says they all occur, and a particular one happened in the case of our solar system. Well, that disagrees with science only if you take the dogmatic viewpoint that only one of these scientifically accepted methods could be right. Well, that happens to be the one that is most popular right now. But there is evidence in our solar system which points the other way, and the Urantia book mentions it. It says that the collisional origin is demonstrated by the presence of retrograde motion on some of the bodies of the solar system. Well, in fact, there is a lot of retrograde motion in the solar system. Now, what this means is that the physics of gas accretion, as it was described by Laplace at least, which was sort of classical accretion from gas and dust, required that everything that condensed out of the original gas rotate in the same direction, and that the orbits of revolution of one thing about another follow the same direction as the rotation of everything on its axis. Retrograde motion implies that something may move in its orbit one way and spin on its axis in the other direction. Now, it happens that we can cite, there are several retrograde things in the universe, the solar system. The most conspicuous is the planet Uranus, which it truly rotates retrograde. Its axis of rotation is tipped below the plane of the ecliptic, below the plane of its orbit. And while it does not rotate completely retrograde, it is so far out of kilter that it could not possibly be explained in terms of any of the classical hydromechanical theories of how it could have accreted. And it is accepted in planetary theory that there is no explanation for this at the present time. But it is not accepted that that demonstrates that there must have been a collisional impact. But it is generally recognized that no one has successfully presented a theory of accretion that deals with this phenomenon, which is well known. Now, one of the moons of Neptune, I believe Triton, rotates retrograde. Also, I believe the planet Venus rotates retrograde. Now, none of this was really clearly established in the 30s. The orientation of the axis of Uranus, the rotation of Triton, and the rotation of Venus were quite unknown at the time of the Urantia book. And so at the time the Urantia book was written, there was no evidence of this degree of retrograde motion. And so it was fairly easy for a theory that couldn't explain it to become established in the scientific mind. But today there is the evidence, and as far as I can tell, the problem really is that nobody has brought forth a compelling collisional theory that has as much math and descriptive value as the nebular condensation theory. And no one has really seriously addressed the problem, I guess, of trying to prove whether you could develop retrograde motion in condensation. For instance, if a mathematician should devote enough effort to it and actually prove what the Urantia book says, that retrograde motion cannot come about through condensation, then that would be a powerful argument against the nebular hypothesis. And the Urantia book seems to imply that such a proof would be possible, that would be you could make a real logical, rational argument that way. But it hasn't been done. It's like the issue has not been explored in enough depth to reach a determinative answer. But one may be possible. The other thing is that even if one is reached, there will be people who will say, but Uranus was tipped out of its position by a comet or by some interstellar wanderer, but not in relation to the formation of the planets. And I don't know how an argument like that would necessarily be answered.
Isn't there a very compelling argument in favor of collision in the fact that the whole solar system, the plane of rotation of most of the planets is out of the equatorial plane? I mean, wouldn't celestial mechanics have a great deal of problem trying to explain how it is that with Laplace's theory of accretion, that we are the plane of the solar system is not rotating along the
equator of the sun. Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I don't know the issues well enough to say with certainty whether that's a problem. I think one thing would come up would be that perhaps the axis of rotation of the sun had shifted. How?
We would be arguing for like a massive object having come by to shift it after the planets had been there.
Well, perhaps it shifted as a result of some sort of yet unexplained self-induced magnetic electrical phenomenon or something, blah, blah, blah. I mean, once you spear a theory, it will squirm a lot before it before it dies, you know. John?
Yeah, it says when the Angolan system pulled by nearby, had a large gravitational pull, that not only did it pull things off of the moon of the sun, but also that I think we captured a couple of planets from them. So
that's where the retrograde stuff came from, I believe.
So it may show out later on in the future that Uranus never even came from our solar system, and that may have been made up there.
Right. Different chemical structure or something like that. Well, the Voyager flyby of Uranus measured the density of the planet, and it was not what a lot of people had been expecting, but I have now forgotten the details of whether it was off in some direction that might be supportive of an extrasolar origin or not.
By rotating retrograde, do you mean it rotates about the sun or orbits the sun in the same direction as all the other planets, but it just spins on its axis in the opposite direction?
Yes.
Is there anything in our solar system that actually orbits in an opposite direction?
I don't think there is any major planet or satellite that does. There might be a comet or a meteor stream or something. I don't really know the answer to that. It might be something very small, a planetesimal or something that goes in the other direction.
So all the retrograde you're talking about, it's just something spinning on its axis in an opposite direction.
Right.
Or tilted.
Right.
Dan?
Yeah.
What about the fact that the planets, it mentions that when they were pulled off, because of the way they were pulled off, you ended up with the larger planets in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all, in size, they taper off towards the, at the ends, towards, they get smaller and smaller.
Yeah. I don't know to what extent the nebular hypothesis explains the size and order of the planets from the accretion. I'm not that familiar with the details of it. I think that what happens is that as the body shrinks, it becomes increasingly oblate, ellipsoidal. And the idea is that there is a critical point reached where the angular momentum of the thing is no longer uniformly distributed in the spinning mass, and there develops a shear zone, and that the central part starts to spin faster than the outer part, and the shear zone develops, and it results in a thinning between the outer and the central part, so that it goes through a period first of being very elliptical, but then at some critical point it flattens out and bulges up in the center. Somehow it separates. Now, I cannot give you a good description, but I think the pictures that are usually drawn of it show the accretion disk after the separation of the central star being ellipsoidal in cross-section, so it's thinner at the edges, inside and outside. Mercury or Venus, then, is a remnant of a possibly larger object that's been burned to a cinder, so to speak. Or that the gas could accreted from a region where the gases were driven off by solar radiation pressure.
Dan, I'd be very interested to know if anybody remarked on the fact that the book claims 12 planets, and we've only found 9, and only hypothesized maybe 10.
Yeah. No, nobody remarked on that.
They found a new one. They had the asteroid.
They found a planetesimal circulating between Saturn and Uranus, I think. A few years back, but it's very small, very tiny thing. It's questionable that it would be what the Urantia book is talking about, although it does occupy an orbit like a planet, but there are other planetesimals like that. There's another one, that one's called Object Kowal, I think. Oh, it got properly named Chiron, finally. There's another one that's called Hidalgo, which occupies an orbit, I think, between Jupiter and Mars or something like that. There may be a lot of this stuff, and I doubt that this is what the Urantia book is talking about, if only because these so-called planetesimals don't fit into this orderly progression of tapering off at the outside. You would presume that the two that are missing are probably smaller than Pluto, and therefore they're going to be really hard to see, because Pluto is really hard to see.
Well, it does talk about the size.
There has been some attempts to look for an outer planet as two different planets rather than one, but I don't think it's borne any fruit yet. Certainly haven't heard of it. Or as they used to say, it hasn't been reported at Harvard. So it can't be real, right?